Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
It's Saturday. He's armed with a week's worth of talking points and got up early for your listening pleasure. So kick back and enjoy all the immensity, the potency, and the intensity that is the Robin Lundberg Show. Here's the man so charismatic, we named the show after him, Robin Lundberg.
And we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away millions during Super Bowl 55. But with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Squares Sweepstakes, see rules and enter for free today at RocketMortgageSquares.com. You've got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers taking on the Green Bay Packers and the Kansas City Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills. It's probably time in the show to make the picks, right? You make some picks. For who you think is going to win this weekend. Which underdog do you think has a better chance to win? During the break, I talked to my son, and he asked me what an underdog is, and he's 6 years old. I said, the team that's not supposed to win. But these two teams are slight underdogs, you know, which means they're just underdogs by a little bit. 3.5 points. It's not like, this is some Cinderella story. Tom Brady is not Cinderella. The Bills have been excellent down the stretch of the season. 855-212-4227. With that said, I'll go with both favorites, and I'll go with both favorites -3.5. You know, I think the way Green Bay looked against the Rams last week just was really impressive to me. This is not an Aaron Rodgers carried team. Aaron Rodgers obviously elevates them to the level they're at. He's been brilliant. I didn't mean that as a diss at Aaron Rodgers, but this is not just Aaron Rodgers. I mean, Devontae Adams is awesome. Aaron Jones is a heck of a running back. Their running game is good overall. Their offensive line is good. Not only does it push for the running game, it protects Rodgers as well. So that Green Bay team as a whole is just tough to deal with, and I'm not sure top to bottom if Tampa is quite on that level. Tampa has the personnel offensively at the skill positions to go with anybody, and they've got Tom Brady. But I don't know top to bottom if that roster is quite to the same level as Green Bay. So I like the Packers -3.5, and also the same goes with the Kansas City Chiefs, simply because they're 14-1 with Patrick Mahomes as a starter. This year, obviously sat out the last game. They're the defending Super Bowl champs. They were the preseason pick by everybody. I don't know if we've seen enough, even though they've played a bunch of close games and the like, to knock them down a peg. But if you're actually asking me which of the two dogs that I give more of a chance, it might be Buffalo. Just because, you know, Mahomes, who knows what his we know his status. We know he's going to play. But who knows if he'll be 100%, how much lingering impact that will have on him, not to mention how well Buffalo's played. And Buffalo didn't exactly have an easy road to get here, even through the playoffs either. I mean, Baltimore was one of the better teams in the league, best team in the league by point differential this year. And Indy, was a tough out as well. Not that Tampa's path was, you know, cruise control. You had to beat the Saints. Though I do think, like I brought up a couple times in the show, if a couple swing plays don't go in Tampa Bay's direction, I believe the Saints win that game. It was Tampa capitalizing on turnovers or missed opportunities that I think really hurt the Saints in that one, more so than Tampa dominating the game from beginning to end. Nevertheless, I like both favorites. I like the Chiefs, and I like the Buccaneers. Still got people weighing in on the topic before about which quarterback has the most to gain. Dave Calamito says Rodgers. He needs a second one to move up the ladder of all-time greats. Florida guy says Allen, number one. A lot of people have, you know, those have been the two most popular picks when it comes to that conversation. Let's go to Dale in South Bend. Dale, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, how's it going, Robin? You make a lot of really good points, but I personally think that Buffalo has a great chance of winning this weekend. If you just look at the stats and the analytics from week 12 on, Buffalo's had the number one red zone defense and not allowing, you know, touchdowns, just giving up maybe field goals or no points at all. And the Chiefs are ranked 26th in red zone offense from week 12 on. And so if you can't score touchdowns and you're kicking field goals, it makes it really hard to win when the other team is scored and they got Stephon Diggs.
Look, I can't really argue against that. If you're, you know, the Bills very well could have been the best team from December on. I think the question with Kansas City was, you know, were they waiting to put their foot all the way down on the gas pedal? And, you know, I don't think that game would have wound up particularly close against Cleveland had Mahomes been able to stay in that game. Though that there was the play near the, you know, the end of the half with the touchback that people were upset about. And I get it, but, you know, that's the rule. And I can't just totally pick against Kansas City because I haven't seen them be beaten really in any of these marquee showdowns. Not to mention my favorite stat about it is Mahomes has never lost a game by more than 8 as a starter. So if you're going to beat them, very, very unlikely to beat them soundly, right? But I can't argue with you saying that Buffalo's been as good as anybody down the stretch, because that's just the truth. That's just the truth. Let's go next to Dave in, is it Hoover, Alabama? You're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. Hoover, Alabama.
Yeah, it's Hoover, Alabama, suburb of Birmingham. Yeah,
there we go.
So, yeah, so, hey, if that had been Buffalo playing Kansas City last weekend, Buffalo would have won the game. Cleveland had every chance to win that game. They just couldn't make it happen. A couple plays they couldn't make. But, I think the elements are going to give Tampa a hard time, even though Brady's used to it. But if I can make a comment real quick about Tua Tagovailoa, I'm a Georgia guy living here in Alabama, Auburn, Purgatory is what they call it. But Tua, after his first full year after winning the national championship, his numbers were 44-4. 44 touchdowns, 4 picks. Against the top five defenses he played, which was Georgia, Auburn, Clemson, LSU, and Mississippi State, he was 4 touchdown passes and 4 picks with a QBR of about 51 with 50% completion percentage. His problem is he's always trying to make a play. That probably goes back to high school. So what he's got to do is get rid of the ball and live for another play and take advantage the weapons he has around him, which are few and far between now. So I think if they can get him some weapons, that's going to help him. But he had a real – that's how he got hurt against Mississippi State and breaking his hip. He would not get rid of the football. You can't do that in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, he was a little actually conservative at the NFL level as far as trying to make plays down the field, but holding onto the ball has been an issue. And you know, he also, though, was coming off of an injury – with no real training camp to speak of, so I do give him some leeway in that regard. I think it all comes down to whether he's got the NFL arm talent, and that remains to be seen. I'm not seeing
it. He has the arm, the legs, the ability to extend plays. He just got to make better decisions. I think you're right about that. His average passes were like 6-7 yards downfield. You got to get that number up.
Well, yeah, which is why they went to Fitzpatrick in some of those games, because he would push the ball down the field, even if it could lead to an interception. I think that's one of the things that maybe Tua was a little bit too cautious in trying to avoid interceptions at the detriment of you know, putting points on the board. I appreciate the call, man. Let's go next to Jeff in Kansas City. Jeff, you're up here on CBS Sports Radio.
First of all, I want to say good morning to you guys. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm going to say something that's surprising the most, but I think Buffalo has a better chance to come in here in Arrowhead and get a win. And I'll give you a couple of reasons why is that both Tampa Bay and Green Bay has been playing better overall football. I've been watching KC all year, and they've been playing good in spurts, but they haven't played a complete game in a while, man. I mean, a long time, maybe since in Buffalo. And I'm not sure if you've got this switch you can turn on and off at will. I'm not sure if that's even possible. And one thing that's disturbing me with Kansas City is that they get penalties and spurts and drive killers and things of that nature, man. And I don't think Green Bay or Tampa Bay will beat themselves. I watch it again, man. I'm just trying to be objective as possible, not be a homer. I've seen a few games, like the second game of the season where KC played San Diego. They were very well could have lost that game. San Diego just didn't know how to win, and there's a few games like that. I'm not taking anything away, but we have to split hairs because you asked a tough question. So what I'm doing is splitting hairs and saying that Kansas City has not played a complete game in a long time, where Buffalo, Tampa Bay, and especially Green Bay has been playing a complete game in all three phases of the game for 60 minutes, and Kansas City has not. So that's my take, my friend. Hope everything is well with you.
Same to you. I agree. If you're having me pick between the two, I am saying that it is the Buffalo Bills that have a better chance at pulling off the upset this weekend between the two games. There's no outcome. Let me make sure I'm clear on that. None of this, which, like, for Tampa to beat Green Bay is not shocking. For Buffalo to beat Kansas City is not shocking. We're not talking about huge upsets here. We're not talking about, like, you know, I can't sell these as, you know, great conference championship games and great quarterback matchups and then think it's some David and Goliath situation. That's not the case. However, you know, they're solid favorites. I think is the right word. Solid favorites, Green Bay and Kansas City. And between the two, I would say that the Bills have the better chance simply because I think, you know, over a long sample now, they've shown that they're a top-level team. You know, in that matchup with the Colts, Frank Reich was very aggressive in certain situations, I think, because he knew he had to put points on the board to beat Buffalo. That's the way you talk about a team like Kansas City. Tampa has the skill position players to beat anybody. Obviously, they got the quarterback who you can't count out in any situation. I just don't know if they're as complete a team as Green Bay is, and Green Bay, you know, is no slouch at quarterback, no slouch at skill position players. In fact, has the best skill position player in the game. I mean, Davante Adams, the season he's had, it's probably gone a little underappreciated. He had that big showdown with Jalen Ramsey last week, and I think Ramsey actually did a good job for the most part. Some of that coverage was zoned up and the like, but I don't think you can just stop Adams. I mean, Adams missed a couple games this year, if you recall, and still caught for 17 touchdowns in the regular season, I believe it was. I mean, so he had just an absolutely monster season overall. And he's got, you know, I talked to Chad Johnson a few weeks ago, you know, Chad Johnson / Chad Ochocinco. And he told me, like, when he watches these guys play, these wide receivers play, the thing he marvels at the most is the footwork of Davante Adams, and that's part of it, just how quickly he gets into what he's trying to do. He turns his body, gives Rodgers a target to throw to, and when the ball's in his vicinity, he brings it down. And he is just a special player at the moment. I mean, I think I'd say there's two guys at that skill position spot, maybe three. I mean, Kelsey belongs in that conversation as well, but Tyreek Hill and Adams, those are the two best receivers in the league to me. Their ability is a little different. For Adams, it's like I said, that footwork, that precision, the hands. For Hill, it's the explosiveness. The fact you put the ball in his hands on a short pass, he could take it to the house or he could burn you over the top and score. Those are the two players outside of the quarterbacks that scare me the most if I'm an opposing defense. And they happen to play on the favorites, but plenty of good receivers for both the other quarterbacks. I mean, Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen have a really good connection. You got Cole Beasley over there as well. And then in Tampa, you know, it was almost an embarrassment of riches for Brady to throw to, though Antonio Brown will be out. And I don't think his loss is insignificant. It's not massive, but I don't think it's insignificant. When Brown first got to the Buccaneers, they lost three of the first four games he was a part of. And He didn't catch a touchdown pass in his first four games in Tampa. And they went through a little bit of a struggle there, to the point where I even saw some people wondering if, you know, he had messed up their rhythm offensively because they got off to a good start. But he sort of found his footing. He had a touchdown in four of the last five games he played, I believe, with the fifth one being last week when he got hurt. And obviously Tom Brady's comfortable with him, you know, comfortable enough that Brady was clearly the driving force in Brown going to Tampa and, you know, everything that comes along with bringing Antonio Brown to your team, given his behavior and antics and conduct over the last several years. So it's not an insignificant loss when you got a guy who was performing well just as the team hit its stride and a quarterback who's comfortable with him. But you look at around the rest of that roster, there's still plenty of options for Brady to throw to, whether that's Mike Evans or Godwin, who's had a weird stretch of games where he hasn't really caught the ball. It's almost like he has the yips at the receiver position a little bit, which is strange because he's a super talented player. Obviously, Gronkowski is there as well. And then they've got those the speedy receivers, Johnson, Miller, you know, so plenty of weapons for Brady, even without Antonio Brown in the lineup. What are your picks for the conference championship games? Tampa Bay, Green Bay, who you got? Kansas City, Buffalo, who you got? 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. Coming up next, I'll talk to someone who'll be on the call of the AFC Championship game between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills. It's the Robin Lundberg Show, and it's here with you on CBS Sports Radio.
Stay in touch with Robin via Twitter. His handle is at Robin Lundberg.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Someone told me it's a pretty important football weekend, rather significant. Just a spot in the Super Bowl on the line. There's four of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, if not the four best legendary quarterbacks involved as well, and some damn good teams. And in order to give you the proper perspective on this weekend's game, I'm joined now by Ross Tucker. He's got the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. He'll be on Westwood One for the call of the AFC Championship game with Ian Eagle and Tony Baselli. And Ross, let's start there then. The Chiefs and the Bills. I think, you know, the first thing is the obvious story that was hard to get a full handle on because, you know, I'm not a doctor. It was the status of Patrick Mahomes. We all expected him to play. Now he's been officially cleared. Obviously, you spent some time in the league. I'm sure you know you dealt with all sorts of forms of injury, both to the body, the head, and the like. What kind of, or you've seen it at least, what kind of effect do you think that might have on Patrick Mahomes' game this weekend?
Yeah, hey, Robin, always good to talk with you. I don't think the concussion protocol is going to be much of an issue for him. In fact, I've seen some guys like Dr. David Chow, 20 years as the team orthopedic surgeon for the Chargers, suggesting that they're not even sure Patrick Mahomes actually had a concussion, because if he did, they believe he'd still be listed as questionable. So if there's any signs of a potential concussion, you go in the concussion protocol, and obviously we all saw him kind of get up wobbly, but he seems to think it has more to do with, you know, the hit he took to his neck, and it's almost like a temporary carotid artery thing. So not to get too deep in the weeds, but doesn't really think he had a concussion in the first place. I do, however, think, Robin, we're not talking enough about the toe injury and the foot injury. And I know Patrick said yesterday that it feels better, but what's he going to say? I mean, in the history of pro football, you've never had a guy 2 days before the game say, actually, it's feeling worse. Yeah, I hope they don't blitz me a lot. I mean, of course you're going to say it's feeling better. But I think if you're the Bills and you saw the fact that you could see him wincing in pain in that game against Cleveland, I think you probably bring more pressure. I think you probably make Mahomes have to move a lot. You know, maybe it's uncomfortable for him. Maybe he doesn't play as well. Maybe he can't move as well. It certainly is one area you could potentially attack.
Yeah, and with him, you know, part of his brilliance is the way he's able to contort himself and throw on the move, throw from those angles. And I would imagine if it is that kind of pain, that's not even something that necessarily just affects you when you're running or on the move, but can affect you when you're stepping into your throws as well.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting, too? Two thoughts on that. One is it's very clear that it was bothering him, right? I mean, we don't need to guess about that. You could see that it's bothering him. So it stands to reason that the more you make him run around, the worse it could get. Maybe he aggravates it, et cetera. So it's a potential weakness that you can attack. The other thing I thought was really interesting, Robin, I was talking with Greg Cosell, you know, 41 years, NFL Films, the NFL matchup guy, on the Ross Tucker podcast on Thursday. And he said something I hadn't heard anybody else said, which is that Mahomes really hasn't played that great the last month or so. The thing is nobody realizes that because his not great is still really good. but if you actually dissect, he's left the pocket, you know, before he had to. He hasn't necessarily operated as efficiently as normal as he normally would. So I thought that was interesting because I hadn't heard anybody else say that he's not really playing to his standard over the last month or so. But I think that's what makes him so special is that when he plays a B game, you know, his best, I think, is the best in the NFL. His average is still like top five in the NFL, which is pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, and, you know, when you talk about not playing at his best, the team on the other side has been. The Bills, they have one loss in the last however many games. It feels like 10 or so, maybe 12 or so in a row it would be if they didn't have that Hail Mary loss to the Cardinals, the Murray play to Hopkins. So it's not even just about where the Chiefs are, it's about where the Bills are, right?
Right. The Bills are interesting to me because, you know, on the one hand, you look at that Colts game, they gave up a season high in yards to the Colts. I mean, the Colts had 472 yards. And I look at it and I think, you know, Josh Allen, Robin, in that game, he became the first quarterback ever to throw for over 300, run for over 50, over 70% completion, didn't turn it over. First guy to ever do that. And they still probably should have lost the game. I mean, Frank Reich made a number of questionable decisions in that game. And then last week, I thought their game against the Ravens was pretty even. You know, the Bills only had 220 yards of offense, and it was the pick six. I mean, it was 10-3. The Ravens are going in. They get to pick six, and everything kind of changed there. But on some level, even though they've been winning by a lot, they're also not, I don't think, firing on all cylinders like they were at the end of the regular season. I think both these playoff games were very, very losable games for them.
Robin Lundberg talking to Ross Tucker. He's got the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. He'll also be on the call for Westwood One of the AFC Championship game. Now, let's switch gears to the NFC for a sec, Ross. I'm sure you have thoughts on that game as well. You've got Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. That's easily the, you know, the baseline thing that people go in with. But I've been really impressed, or I was particularly impressed, by the Packers a week ago, considering how well that Rams defense had been playing. I know Aaron Donald was banged up a little bit. Rodgers is clearly, you know, playing as well maybe as he ever has, but that Green Bay team can run the ball. They protect him. You know, he's got some solid receivers in addition to Adams, who's a great player. Do you think that the Green Bay roster all around is more well-rounded than what Tampa has with Brady and the weapons he has at the skill positions, but maybe not around the rest of the team?
You know, I think the rosters are probably comparable. And I think if you went player by player, you'd probably take the Bucs roster. I mean, you look at, like, you know, Vita Vea just got activated. You look at the Bucs D-line, JPP, Shaq Barrett, you know, and Ndamukong Suh, Vita Vea, and then Devin White and Lavonte David. I mean, those are a couple of dudes at linebacker. I think the difference is that the Packers have been playing together longer and that Aaron Rodgers is playing on another level right now. You know, Brady's good. And look, nobody likes Tom Brady more than I do. You know, we were teammates in 2005 and 2006, but right now Rodgers has just been playing on a totally different level. So I'm not even sure it's the roster, because even if you look at the receivers, you know, you're taking Chris Godwin and Antonio Brown over the second and third receivers for, you know, the Packers all day. I still think you're probably taking Gronk over Tonyan. Then you got Cam Brate. So I think the personnel is probably leaning to Tampa a little bit. I just think the familiarity with the scheme and system, and then Rodgers playing at an MVP level, is what sort of puts the Packers over the top.
That's a good point. Antonio Brown is out, but you know, you referenced JPP and those guys on the line. Do you think they can give Rodgers problems?
Well, that's the key for me. No question about it. Because, man, if you would have told me that Billy Turner would be starting at left tackle in the conference championship game, that would have really surprised me. I mean, this is a guy that, kudos to him for battling in his career, but he's flamed out a couple places as a guard, and now he's starting at left tackle because there's no David Bakhtiari. Even Ricky Wagner at right tackle had kind of been benched earlier in the year for Billy Turner. So now you got JPP and Shaq Barrett. That is where I think the Bucs have an advantage. Those guys have to win. They have to win time and time again because the interior O-line, Jenkins, Lindsley, Patrick, they're pretty solid for the Pack. So those edge guys are going to have big games for Tampa Bay, no doubt about it.
Ross, you know, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about myfrontpagestory.com. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, man. So I'm just telling you, it's my buddy's company. I help spread the word around Valentine's Day because it is the best Valentine's Day gift ever. Robin, you talk to a writer for like 10 minutes. They have professional writers. You tell them how great your wife is or your girlfriend or whoever, right? They write the most unbelievable story, and then it's framed with a picture. It looks like it's on the cover of the newspaper. Like, it looks like it's on the cover of the New York Daily News or whatever. And then when you give it to your wife, and I have experience with this, and you say, hey, babe, I want to do something special for you this year, so I had a story written about you. That just sounds awesome. Like, I had a story written about – who gets a story written about somebody? And then when she actually reads it and sees the quote where you say, I don't appreciate everything she does for the family enough and the kids, she'll cry. Like, I've seen it. We get videos. I've seen the videos. She will cry. You will win. I promise. Myfrontpagestory.com. It's myfrontpagestory.com.
Hey, you know, look, I might take you up on that because I've run out of ideas. So,
yeah, you know what? I mean, you can't really take them out to dinner with the COVID. Everybody's done with the flowers or the chocolate. I'm telling you, man, like, she'll never have seen anything like it before. She's like, what is this? Like, we got one for my mom when she turned 70. She's got it hanging in her house. We got one for my wife's grandmother when she was going into a senior. I mean, it really is. Like, I've yet to see someone get one and not think it's cool and literally have it hanging in their house.
Well, there you go, Ross. Appreciate the time today, and good luck on the call of the AFC Championship game.
Thanks, Robin. I appreciate that. I'm supposedly on sideline duty, but I'm not allowed actually on the sideline. So I think I might be getting paid to just be.
Looks like
it'll be interesting.
Oh, there you go. Can you repeat that? You dropped out for just a second there. You said you looks like you might be getting paid to do what?
Oh, sorry, man. I think, you know, I'm on quote unquote sideline duty, but because of COVID, I'm not actually allowed on the sideline. So I think I might just be sitting in the third row as Ian Eagle comes down to me and says, "Hey, Ross, what's going on in the third row?" I'll be like, "I don't know. My beer's cold. Mahomes is still good. Back to you, Ian."
Not a bad gig if you can get it, right?
Exactly, buddy. Exactly.
All right. Have a good one, Ross. Appreciate the time.
All right. Thank you.
Miss any of the show? Catch up with the Robin Lundberg podcast. Available all week on the weekend page at CBSSportsRadio.com.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Conference championship edition. Jesse Swinger tweets in, I'll take both teams plus 3.5. Chiefs win and Bucks win the game. 3.5, not many points. Like, that, it's that half a point, right? That's always, they're so good at that. That's the one that always gets you. Like, in fact, if you're not betting just like outright, if you're not betting money line, I would suggest if you are betting on the favorites there, you might want to move the line to 3 just to protect yourself from that half a point, that dastardly half a point that could get you. But, I mean, that shows you these should, you know, on paper are really good conference championship games. There's obviously the Chiefs are an excellent team, and so are the Packers this year, but they are in no way runaway favorites or even heavy favorites in this game. You're down to the four best teams in the NFL, and none of them are in there with a crazy weakness. You know, none of them are in there with a liability at QB, you know, so we'll see how things play out this weekend. I will pick the favorites. I actually think Buffalo might have the better chance at the upset, but what the hell do I know? I don't think any of us really know at this point in time. I just was won over by Green Bay's performance last week. I doubted them a little bit based on them getting fat against their division this year and only beating two teams with a winning record. But Tampa did handle Green Bay before, and Ross Tucker just made an excellent point when he was on here about the defensive personnel that Tampa has. They're also very aggressive under the coordinator, who just has a penchant for being really aggressive in how he plays. So I'm sure Todd Bowles is going to try and get after Aaron Rodgers in that one, not let him sit back and pick the Tampa Bay Buccaneers apart. But if you want to get involved in that conversation, you can at 855-212-4227. Got about 10 minutes left here, 855-212-4227. But before we do that, I'll get to all the topics I have not covered as of yet in another one.
It's time for another edition of Another One on the Robin Lundberg Show. The rumors, reports, and ridiculous from the week that was. Here's Robin Lundberg.
Anthony, what's up first, man?
All right, so we've talked about Philip Rivers on the program this morning. While he hasn't officially retired yet, we do expect Drew Brees to hang up his cleat. So the Saints, of course, were a disaster of a franchise until Brees and Sean Payton took the helm back in 2006. So in 14 seasons, we're excluding 2012 because Payton was suspended for a bounty gate, the duo reached 3 NFC championship games, won one of those, of course, and then won their lone Super Bowl appearance following the 2009 season, defeating the Colts. No team has won more regular season games than the Saints in the past 4 years. Other than the Chiefs, no team has won more division titles in the last 5 years. Did Brees and Peyton, did the Brees-Peyton era underachieve?
No. I don't think you win as consistently as they did and win a Super Bowl and elevate yourself to being called the Brees and Peyton era. That does not coincide with underachieving, right? If they underachieved, they wouldn't be Brees and Peyton. They wouldn't be who they are right now. I do think the one thing that keeps Brees down a little bit, you know, when you're talking about when he retires, is he this or is he that? I think the case that is made oftentimes for Drew Brees is a statistical one purely. You know, it's based on all the accolades and records and things like that. And, he has gaudy, eye-popping numbers. And don't get me wrong, he's a great quarterback. But it's generally a stats-based argument, not a performance-based one. Like, you don't usually hear people talking about, you know, their favorite Drew Brees games. And there's a lot of quarterbacks over the years who, you know, I could make the case over Drew Brees for. I think he's closer to top 10 all-time than he is top 5, for instance. Whether you're going back to, you know, before the modern era a little bit with the, you know, I mean, still the modern era, before the current way the game is played with the pass. And John Elway or obviously Joe Montana, Steve Young. I always loved Steve Young. Steve Young was, you know, 3-time Super Bowl champ, 2-time MVP. Then you get into the contemporaries and Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. You know, a guy who didn't win a Super Bowl back in the past, Dan Marino. The guys who are on the come up now, and Mahomes and Wilson. Not to mention Rodgers, obviously. So I think Drew Brees probably overachieved what he was supposed to be as a quarterback. Not probably, clearly did. I just don't know if I consider him quite that pantheon level. And part of that is not winning more than one Super Bowl. But I think becoming who Brees and Peyton became, both individually and as a duo, is a success, even if it is only one Super Bowl. A lot of, you know, A lot of greats go without ever winning one. What's next?
Another one.
We'll stick with the Saints. Some end of the season trade rumors. After an ankle injury and issues with the Saints, Michael Thomas had his worst season in the NFL, making just 40 catches and being held to 438 yards. That combined with the off-field issues led to some speculation that New Orleans could look to trade Thomas. Ian Rappaport told the Pat McAfee show earlier this week that he did not see a Thomas trade as likely, but would not rule it out. So do you think Michael Thomas will be on the Saints next season?
There was clearly some issues there internally this year. He was injured, though. As far as like his performance, I think that comes down to injury. I don't know, you know, what they're thinking behind the scenes. If we're up to me, purely based on talent, I would want him back. I mean, he's only a year removed from 1,725 yards and 9 touchdowns, over 100 yards per game in 2019. I can't speak to, you know, the evaluation behind the scenes, but just from a performance evaluation, I would chalk this year up to injury more than anything else. The bigger question is what they're doing at quarterback. Are they, you know, is it Taysom Hill? Is it Jameis Winston? Is it both? I've seen some people speculate that it might be both, you know, rotating QBs. I think that's the real answer in New Orleans, is who's the successor to Drew Brees. What's next?
Another one.
The Ravens will reportedly explore a contract extension with Lamar Jackson this offseason, but the team also needs a number one wide receiver for Lamar. The Ravens' passing attack ranked last in the league during the regular season. So you have a bunch of top wide receivers set to hit the free agent market, including Allen Robinson, Chris Godwin, Juju Smith-Schuster, Will Fuller. So the question is whether it's feasible for the Ravens to both extend Jackson and sign a number one wide receiver this offseason. So what should Baltimore's number one priority be? Signing Jackson to an extension or signing a number one wide receiver?
Look, the problem is they need to do both. Jackson needs a number one wide receiver in Baltimore. But you can't, you know, play around with the commodity that you have at the QB position. I know he hasn't been perfect in the playoffs, but you're still talking about clearly the answer at the quarterback position, which is the hardest one to find. And I get it. Roster building is more difficult once you sign a QB to a big, big deal. However, if you're making me choose between the two, I think you have to make sure you're good with the quarterback who you know keeps you in contention on an annual basis. But I think they got to figure out a way to make both work, because in order to get the best out of Jackson, he's got to have that target he feels most comfortable with. What's next?
Another one.
Shaquille O'Neal, he put Donovan Mitchell in an awkward spot on Thursday night after a victory over the New Orleans Pelicans. In the post-game interview, Shaq said the following: "I said tonight that you are one of my favorite players, but you don't have what it takes to get to the next level," O'Neal said. "I said it on purpose because I wanted you to hear it. What do you have to say about that?" Was Shaq disrespectful to Donovan Mitchell?
Yeah, kind of. I don't think it was fair. Look, Shaq has accomplished a lot in the game, and he said it right to him. I mean, I guess there's something to that. But at the same time, like, it is a problem, and I'm guilty of it at times too, in the type of dialogue that we involve ourselves in, where, like, if you're not the best or you don't win the championship, like, you suck or something, which is far from the case. With Mitchell, I don't think Donovan Mitchell's one of the very top players in the NBA, nor do I think the Jazz are going to win the championship. But Donovan Mitchell has exceeded any reasonable expectation of what he would become as a player. He averaged 36 points in the playoffs last year. He scored 36 in the game in question. The Jazz had just won their 7th straight game. So I don't think it was a fair approach to the conversation to just your takeaway be you're never going to get to the next level. I mean, what, you know, other than becoming LeBron James or Kevin Durant or someone like that, what is Mitchell supposed to do? So, you know, I don't think it was particularly fair, and I also don't think it's necessarily the best look for the sport overall that you're constantly having guys like sort of hate on the current guys a little bit. I think inside the NBA is very entertaining, by the way, but it's not exactly the place I go to for basketball analysis. What's next?
another
one. Well, it's the pop culture portion of the segment, and unfortunately, you did not, as of yet, you have not seen episode 3 of WandaVision. So again, I'm not going to give anything away. I'm not going to spoil anything. I'll just say that I think it's the wackiest episode yet. And I'll just say we're moving into the 1970s now, which again, we saw in the trailer that we were going to be in different decades. So we've entered now the 1970s portion here of the season. So again, it's wacky. We've hit the 70s. We're in color now. It's in color. And I know a lot we talked about last week, some theories about what was happening and Wanda like creating this fake world for herself. And I think that this episode will further cement that fact as well. So
I know you're loving it. I can tell
dude,
you.
Dude, I love it, man. I love it. I went out. I bought all the Funko. I'm not like a big Funko Pops guy, but for some reason, I don't know. I've been so into this thing. I saw them there. I bought all of them. So I have all the Funko Pops now for WandaVision.
Another pop culture thing I'm kind of excited about is Godzilla versus King Kong.
I hope that
could be good.
You like that trailer, huh?
I have
to watch it.
Come on, I mean, like Godzilla versus King. They upsized King Kong. So in a typical fight, I would have picked Godzilla because he steps on buildings, King Kong climbs them. But at the same size, I'm taking a gorilla over a reptile. Even though there's the whole atomic breath that's mixed into the equation. I'll be back next Saturday morning. Ken Carman's up next. It's been the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.